Chapter 12. Talon Reports. The torrential rains darkened the sky as the lightning dissipated the enormous amounts of energy stored in the atmosphere. The rock cliffs where the Talons hid provided minimal protection from the weather, but with the rains came the opportunity to move, without fear of being discovered by the sentries. It was a scout that informed them that the camp was empty. No guards, no Talons, nothing. There were 48 of them that had escaped into the surrounding mountainous terrain during the rains a long time ago. The next set of workers were not as lucky. They each wore neck collars that would damage their bodies if they ventured too far away from the camp. Judging by the reports of the collars scattered around on the ground near the shelters, the workers had somehow figured out how to remove them. Chatel pondered this new information. So, they managed to run away too, and the guards are gone. That did not seem right. Why did the guards leave unless the work was complete? The scout had also reported that most of the workers' belongings are still in the building, and a large amount of mining rod and cable was left behind. Why would they leave behind so much? It was true, the giants were coming more and more often, but to leave the equipment? Perhaps signs of the times. The giants, he referenced, lived in the sky and made their home on the ground. Great, monstrous plasma columns that would come and go with the proximity of the neighboring planet. The farther away from each other, the fewer energetic discharges. It was when the planets approached each other that the thundering titans returned, leaving behind a landscape scarred by the intense heat, and minds scarred from the dread invoked. Then there was the ghostly aberrations. The distant planetary discharges produced hideous, great monsters drawn on the sky, striking fear and wonder into all who witnessed them, the most affected being the children, who don't understand any of it. They just want it to stop. The spectacle is produced by means of electric current filaments that intensify and wrap around one another, sometimes producing a flower petal shape when viewed from the end. This intense plasma produced energetic photons of light, revealing the plasma's existence and damaging the sensitive cells in the eyes of those who refuse to look away from the blinding aberration. The group of Talon runaways knew that going after the abandoned equipment and food was a risk worth taking. A second survey of the camp indicated no one was there, so the decision was made to move in quickly and take as many of the supplies as could be carried. None of them wanted to be there any longer than necessary. Relocating the resources from the camp to their home in the cliffs was a hurried affair. The fearful Talons, constantly looking over their shoulders, expecting to see a group of sentries giving chase. But nothing happened, and the much-needed bounty gave the weary group renewed hope. The long pole discharge lances, along with the insulated cable, would be put to good use, carving out a fortress high up on the cliff face. The need for shelter from the atmospheric discharges was paramount, but if the axis of the planet were to reverse, the cataclysm that would result would kill them all if their protection were not adequate. Even the children understood the importance of being prepared for the possibility of that event. If the electrified neighbor comes too close, the huge amount of transferred energy may affect the maximum moment of inertia being experienced by the planet's rotation. If it happens, the axis could flip. If an axis reversal were to occur, it would cause horrendous amounts of damage due to the energy stored up in the planet's liquids and gases. The gaseous atmosphere and the liquid water would not behave in the same way as the solid body of the planet. There would be massive flooding and ultra-powerful winds as the fluids come to equilibrium with the planet's new rotational direction. Then again, it could be a cycle that is repeated until the energy received from the other planet is dissipated, once again allowing the planet to rotate about the axis which maximizes the moment of inertia. Then, too, the spin of the planet would be affected, losing rotational energy every time a flip occurs. For the Talons, a loss of centripetal motion simply means they experience a greater gravitational acceleration, something closer to what the group was accustomed to. For any indigenous life that managed to survive such a cataclysm, the increase in gravity would likely kill off a significant portion of the larger species, not being able to cope with the added weight bearing down on their frames. The close encounter with the neighboring body has only caused stunning electrical displays and some impressive electrical discharge machining to the surface of the small world. It would be nothing like what the two neighbors are experiencing. The damage must be significant, as the closest to the bright dominant world, most likely Regem, was certainly suffering the most. The surface was probably molten by now, Chatel wondered in awe. The energy imparted to it was twofold. Huge currents from a gem charging it up, then the eventual repulsion to the point where it discharged to the neighboring planet. Receiving sufficient charge, this body would also be repelled, only to have it show up above their own planet, ready to create a plasma nightmare that would last for days. Once the two bodies come to charge equilibrium, the cycle repeats, a cascading back and forth of immense energetic emissions that was only going to get worse as Regem absorbed even greater energies as it raced along the path through the star's solar wind. Yes, it is going to get much worse, Chatel thought. Chatel understood that at some point, this energy imparted to the family of planets would overcome the grip Regem had on their little world, and they would part ways. The separation would allow each to move into orbit around the new star. Would it be this time through the system, or would the planet Regem and its followers return to the system I so long for, some period of time in the future? Chatel could only speculate at this. All the writings, songs, and pictures that were handed down from countless generations showed that something remarkably similar had happened on Talon. The bombelet resting between the three pillars is the same as the ones that are on display with honor on Talon. Too many similarities to ignore. Perhaps Talon was originally part of this small system, whose glowing parent was providing the heat and light needed to sustain the planet's inhabitants. Nina Tam was under the same impression, as he once again thought of the human companions and the great things which were accomplished. Comparing their own history with the pictures supplied to them from the humans of what they termed rock art showed a similar period on both worlds, where much of their two cultures seemed to collide. So many similarities. But with so much of the humans' old writings destroyed, they would have found it impossible to come to any real agreement about what the ancient artifacts meant. Nina Tam recalled the huge stacks of stone they called pyramids. Massive things, he thought. Arranged in a way to absorb the maximum amount of electrical force without succumbing. Were they miners? Artists? Was it built for protection? Perhaps food storage? Regardless, it was there to be harvested when the stones were needed on some far-off world, but something must have happened. John had explained where the bobelets were found. Off in space. A long way from Earth. What were they doing there? A smile settled on Nina Tam's face, thinking about the miners, waiting too long to leave the system, and a significant number of the bobelets experiencing a shock state inside their ship, tearing it apart. That will teach them, Nina Tam thought to himself, feeling more satisfied. Talon contributions. The captured Rumorian ship was already in orbit over the homeworld being disassembled. minus a few prisoners that had the expertise, the crew was given a trial, found guilty of numerous crimes, and promptly executed. The ones that had cooperated were to be held in confinement for life, helping to advance the limited knowledge of the Talon people. Disassembly of the transport was one thing. Understanding was another, and there was a lot about the new equipment that was beyond the Talon's grasp. The Roomerion had made it a bit easier for them, as most everything was unprotected. It was assumed that the inferiority of any species they typically sought out would lose to any kind of confrontation. The ships were slower and the weapons weaker. Even if a ship was damaged, the crew knew to destroy it and themselves without question. There was no need to guard against information loss. The navigation material was another matter. Much of that data was destroyed before the officers could be restrained, and without the aid of the automatic course plotting, the Roomerion homeworld remained hidden. The undamaged information showed several systems that these faster Roomerion ships could access, several of which had inhabitants. All of them had raw materials that were identified and located for future excavation. Using the recovered miners as interpreters, the fact that the Talons were only being used to provide labor on this one single planet was revealed. When asked about the second species of worker, only one of the prisoners gave any kind of clue, and that was a finger pointed at a group of stars on one of the charts. "Not much to go on, but perhaps they took the human there," Nina Tam speculated. Roomerion Intel. The Roomerion Chief Council was in a different sort of mood.
"Two crippled transport vessels and a raider helping to keep them alive until they could make it back to local space. And where is the fourth ship? This was terrible news for not only the company but for the planet. They had only just started to harvest the ore from the Talon system, and now what? All the mining equipment is still there, perhaps destroyed by the attackers from the Talon, and how did they make the journey? They did not have that kind of technology. And what about fulfilling the contract? The Lobelian were creatures you do not want to anger, but what can I do?"
The troubled Roomerion ran through different scenarios in his mind.
"There was going to be repercussions from everywhere, but first, intelligence would suffer. The failure to warn us about the Talon capabilities, this should not have happened. The small attack craft were certainly Talon-made, and they moved between the systems. Do the Talons have that kind of capability now? This is a problem that needs to be addressed. We cannot have an equal so close to our world. Intelligence failure, yes, that was easy to see. A price needs to be paid, and it certainly is not my fault. I can select the candidates for elimination, which will be broadcast to all. The company will be satisfied, but that won't help the relationship with the Lobelian, because without the ore they cannot build their devices. And what about the news that the raider had used a group of Lobelian to first locate and finance the ore removal, then force them to work the mines? This is terrible news. Who oversees that ship? Why wasn't I told? There shall be repercussions."
Discussions had already taken place, and a group of delegates traveled to the Lobelian space to plead the case.
"It is not our fault. We will double our efforts. You need our services. Help us to succeed. You see," the council explained to the disgruntled customer, "we have a plan."
Declassified government docs. John West's body was relocated to an Army base quarantine center, where the opening of the container would occur, and several observers were on hand to witness the event. With all the safeties up and the cameras rolling, the procedure began.
Heater's on. Thermocouple reads 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit, called out one of the attending specialists. Single press of the button, 0.5 seconds hold time. Result is the same as the accelerometer. Display clear, video roll off. Double press of the button, 0.5 second hold time. Same result as the prior test. The excitement that the onlookers had experienced only a short time ago dwindled quickly. The list that made up the test procedure was faithfully followed. One by one, the boxes were checked until finally, after the 4 second button hold time was pressed, did the unit open. It disintegrated in a blazing flash of energy that was sustained for nearly a minute. The remnants left behind were wispy cinders of carbon that ascended with the draft from the air handling system to become lodged in filters high above the spectators. The gurney now supported a naked body, whose head was surrounded by the only remaining part of the shroud, a band of clear plastic containing the button and the thin wire still attached to one side. The group of doctors and nurses stood motionless, open-mouthed, watching the exhaust fan do its job. All that energy released right next to them, and they felt nothing, just the cool airflow. What they had just witnessed was incredible, a puzzle beyond their reasoning. The arm raised, fingers curled over, not in a fist, but more like a claw that was tensioned, preparing to strike. Nobody noticed. The bewildered audience surrounding the body was stunned into awkward silence, each mind looking for reassurance that what they had just witnessed was real. As the seconds ticked by, the muscle in the forearm contracted, drawing the wrist back, the driving thrust forward only moments away. But the brain thought it better to engage the mouth first. "For crying out loud," the observer complained. As the doctors and nurses looked to one another, searching for an explanation to the process for what they had just experienced, there was a sudden rapping at the window. The moment vanished like the wisps of smoke that were the remains of the missing shroud, and the group was forced to come back to reality. Removing the only piece that remained, a plastic band containing a button, a cover, and a long wire, was a simple matter of gently raising the head and sliding it back off the table. This task was being performed by two nurses in attendance. The remainder of the team quickly hooked up the monitoring equipment, affixing an oxygen mask, and charging the defibrillator. The heart was started without difficulty, and he resumed normal breathing almost at once. As if awakening from a deep sleep, John opened his eyes and smiled. "Well?" John asked the doctor, who was staring at him in amazement. The word was muffled by the mask. After careful removal of the oxygen and a quick check of the vitals, the doctor looked down into the face of the man laying naked on the table. "How do you feel?" he asked in a calm voice. "I'm still waiting for someone to get me a coffee." "Oh, and a blanket. I can feel a draft." West Archives. "Look, Doc, I don't have anything. I don't see what the big deal is." "The big deal, Mr. West, is that I'm not letting you out of this room for at least a couple of weeks, and more likely a month." The doctor was used to this type of conversation. He had had it with many of his patients, and they were all going to react the same. Generally indignant, then bewilderment, and finally, resentful resignation. "Then get me a pack of cigarettes in here pronto, with a lighter. I need a smoke." "I'm sorry, Mr. West, but smoking is not allowed in this hospital wing, and you are not allowed outside. At least not yet, so I'm sorry." The doctor was not sorry. He had viewed the chest x-rays, and it was not pretty. "Doc, I saw the video. You had a 7-foot-long cylinder incinerated in this very room not more than 12 hours ago.
You don't allow smoking.
John was back to wanting to be impertinent.
I'll see if I can round you up a nicotine patch for you. How does that sound?
The doctor was not to be put out.
How about if I get hold of the calico and get my Marines down here to blow the roof off your...
Hi, Dad. How are you feeling?
John turned to see Rachel standing on the other side of the window.
Rachel, nice haircut. I like it, he complimented.
She had gone back to the short do out of frustration of the longer hair in space, and just to make a change. The past few weeks had been stressful.
The president gave me clearance to come and see you. How are you feeling?
She asked.
I'm fine. Still a few gaps in my memory, but I'm fit as a fiddle.
You'll probably die of lung cancer in 10 years if you don't stop smoking, the doctor's chastising remark was emphasized by a look of concern.
No thanks to you, Doc. I was doing just fine being dead already until you brought me back to life, so don't criticize how I live it.
Seeing no reason to fight this losing battle, the doctor turned and began walking out.
I'll see if I can find you that patch.
His words fell on deaf ears.
Did the president come with you?
John asked.
She's right here.
Rachel's deadpan voice carried meaning. As she could hear the conversation, Susan Capshaw moved into view, waved, and jammed a fresh pack of cigarettes up against the window.
Truce?
She asked, half expecting him to explode.
Hey, he said with approval. I'm glad someone here is looking after my health and well-being. You got a light?
With the transfer complete, he lit up and relaxed, looking at the two women on the other side of the glass.
Lighten up, Rachel, her father ordered. She could have killed you, Dad, over nothing.
Rachel was still furious.
And Paige is no better,
she followed up, turning her head to look down the hall.
Paige is here, too?
John asked in surprise. A meek young woman suddenly walked into view, stood next to the president, and tried to smile, but her nerves got in the way.
Nice try, you two.
You're not mad?
Said by both his daughter and his president at the same time. One as an annoyed statement, the other as a hopeful question.
The cadets on the calico have hardened my soul to the idea of having things taken from me.
Besides, unless you're not keeping score, I stole from the president first, remember? The fact had been lost on all until he reminded them.
Hey, yeah!
Paige realized, suddenly feeling better about herself.
Speaking of, the president said, slightly annoyed, how do you think I should feel about that?
Relieved, he guessed. As it turned out, his guess was correct. Just then, both she and Paige were the two most relieved people on the planet.
Not to worry. We're decommissioning the calico and returning all the DOD stuff,
Rachel threw out with a tang of spite.
Why?
John asked, not sure what prompted the decision.
You and Sarah agreed that the ship would be scrapped if it came back to Earth once you guys planted the tracking bug.
Okay. Why are we giving all the rest of it back? Is that something you're insisting on, Susan?
John never used her first name unless they were alone, and that had only happened for a few days.
It's Rachel's idea, Susan Capshaw stated flatly.
Screw that, Rachel, he said in defiance to his daughter's insistent look. I fought hard to get that equipment, and if it's sanctioned, we keep using it.
Rachel was taking on a look of defeat when John spoke up.
Look, young lady, I know you're pissed, and you have a right to be. But I think we can all learn something from this experience, and part of it has to be trust. We didn't come back with the intent of destroying the planet. In fact, we came back with a trading partner and friend.
All three women suddenly found themselves lost. The blank looks gave it away.
The Talons, John said offhandedly.
Oh.
I would say, keep the hull and scrap the outer tiles, but whatever, he finally said,
So what's the scoop with the step relays?
Shannon says they're junk, Rachel's voice was calming.
I know. I was there when they were turned to junk.
No. She says that they should be updated for step six.
Step six? She got step six to the point where she can make the relays work? John's voice was totally disbelieving.
That little bitch, he thought to himself.
I don't know. Came out as a...
Did she give you a time frame on this little miracle? He asked, starting to sulk.
I mean, we already know the other relays work as long as those two don't wreck them.
The jab caused Rachel to crack a smile. The other two women crossed their arms and took it.
Madam President? Can the other units be repaired?
Yes, with relative ease is my understanding.
Well, it seems to me we should get those back up and Shannon can work on her upgrade at her leisure.
He looked at all three, not really expecting an answer.
I'll talk to her and find out, Rachel said.
I should probably get going, Dad. I need to be in Houston later today.
Well, next time you come back, bring a pack of smokes for your old man.
It did not take long, and he was alone again.
I'm glad these two parted ways on solid footing.
The thought was still in his mind when a nurse wearing a protective suit walked in to check on the patient and deliver the nicotine patch.
No thanks, he told her, as she was removing it from the wrapper.
I think I'll be all right without that.
The nurse finished up and left to give the doctor the good news.
He may be trying to quit.
Before the door was closed, John was lighting up and thinking back to what had happened. He had seen the video that was supplied with the canister, showing him pointing his arm and walking out of the crushed transport tube. He had obviously said something to whoever it was he was pointing at, because he could see the lips move. But what was it? He took another drag and kicked back.
A month. That's bullshit.
Sarah interviews.
Hey, Doc. It's West here, John announced to the speakerphone.
West where?
Who is this?
The voice sounded perplexed.
Dad, we haven't actually told anyone about you.
Sarah's voice sounded slightly embarrassed.
That's why I wanted to make the connection.
Who is this? Dr. Raymond Schubert demanded.
John West, Doc. I was wondering, did you get any good photos of my dead body on that rock?
Okay, I don't know who you are, but I'm hanging up now.
Doctor,
Sarah hurriedly spoke.
This is Sarah. Do you hear me?
Yes, Captain. I can hear you.
Is that really your father speaking?
The astonishment filled his voice.
Yes, it is.
Sarah said, smiling, looking through the glass at the evidence.
He was dead. He was frozen.
How?
It was a short-term gig, Doc. Guess I can scratch that off the old bucket list.
His face had turned red with mirth, and the tears began to well as John sat there laughing at his own joke.
Doctor, Sarah began, while at the same time wondering what was so funny. Dad was hoping that you were using your scope to photograph the asteroid when we found its body.
Dr. Schubert suddenly felt ashamed to acknowledge that he had.
Doc, I lost my glasses, and I was wondering if you could look through your photos and locate them for me,
he asked hopefully.
Your glasses? The good doctor said flatly. Can't you just order another pair?
The confusion was once again filling his mind as he pulled up several photos on the wide-format monitor.
They're the comms headset I was wearing during the rescue of the Talons from that planet.
Yes, I see. It did not take long as multiple high-res shots of the area taken from several vantage points showed the glasses and several other items that had not been retrieved.
Doc, you are a lifesaver, John praised.
So are you going to be available to relocate your equipment onto the Persian?
I'm sorry? The Persian? We're scrapping the hull of the Calico and shoving everything into a new skin. I'd sure like to see your gear on that new ship.
Yes, certainly. I would too.
When is this taking place?
Sarah spoke up, seeing her father's questioning look.
The skins are being welded together, and NASA says they can deliver the pieces to the Trinidad Bridge in about 2 weeks.
If Dresden Technologies gets their act together and supplies a tile, the shell will be ready to mate with the frame in less than a month.
Shannon says that the coil assemblies will be ready by then, too.
This last part about the tiles was not for the doctor or her father. More a mental note to push them to get the order out.
Moving your cameras will be one of the last things we do, so we'll keep you up to speed. How about that?
Sarah asked with a pleasant note in her voice.
Yes, I can be available to help, of course.
Thanks, Doc. And he hung up the phone.
Sarah, I need those glasses, John stated.
Dad, you said it yourself. It was a dream that shook you up so bad. It was just a dream. The idea of traveling all the way back to simply retrieve that comm set is kind of stupid, don't you think? And why not tell us about the dream? Even the psychiatrist specialists here want you to open up. It certainly seems to have affected you.
Sarah, look. What I saw in the dream mimics what I saw on the video of my death. You can clearly see that I was pissed about something. And I was gonna confront them about it, I think. He was getting a headache. What I saw in my dream can't happen, okay? But remember, a few years ago, we didn't have the step drive either. That was impossible, and everyone knew it. What I saw in the dream is so out there that no one will believe me, and that is the problem. Maybe it was just a dream, but if it truly is what I saw, I need those glasses to confirm it and show the rest of you the truth.
Show the rest of us what?
Sarah was slowly shaking her head. Sarah, it's about the end of the world. Our world. I need those glasses. If I'm right, the evidence I need is on them. If I'm wrong, he let the question dangle. Sarah looked at her father standing there, arms at his side, hands clenched with a look of frustration. She was confident that he had not suffered some kind of mental deterioration. But the doctors were not so sure. The idea that any loss of mental fitness might start to manifest itself in dreams was a real possibility, and his end-of-the-world prediction was beginning to sound like a mental breakdown.
Dad, I'm sorry, but I can't authorize a Persian to go on a wild goose chase based on a dream. Not when we have a backlog of paying customers waiting for that ship's service.
I'm not asking you, Sarah. I'm telling you. I need those glasses back here pronto. You can lay in a string of relays to the talent system, and at the same time, we can perhaps start a trading relationship.
Dad, you said it yourself. You are retired now. The company is officially out of your hands as of 3 days ago. I am sorry, but I cannot allow for this kind of mission. Maybe one day we can stop by and get them, but it won't be any time soon.
John suddenly felt like a trapped animal as he looked through the glass at his daughter.
Dad, you need to share your dream with the resident psychologist so that he can make an assessment.
They are all concerned that the caffeine and nicotine may be contributing to your apprehensive nature. So they have decided to hold off on giving you any more stimulants for now.
We want you to get better, Dad, not worse. Until you are given a clean bill of health, I'm afraid you need to stay put.
I see, was all he could come up with as he turned away from the window.
Look, Dad, I need to go, but I also need to know you will be all right,
Sarah said with real concern. I'll be fine, sweetheart, Go. Sarah turned from the viewing window and killed the audio. The two physicians were standing just off to the side, having listened to the conversation.
He saw something, doctors. You see it in the video. He appears rational, except for the world-ending dream.
It's for his own good. We just do not know if the images will get worse. But a maximum 6-month evaluation period will provide an excellent baseline. He will be required to be moved to an institution setting, but we have extremely comfortable facilities, and you will be kept up to date on his progress.
Sarah found herself walking out of the military hospital, with tears running down her cheek, and a copy of the commitment order in her hand.
Probably should have talked this over with Rachel first, but she's so busy right now. No, it's the right call. Dad needs some help, and they will surely provide it, she told herself.
West Archives. It did not take a genius to read the writing on the wall, so he hoped that his idea would work. He picked up the phone and located the name, typed in a short message, and pressed send.
Come and visit me again, ASAP.
He then sat down and, typing on the display, worded out a rather lengthy message, which he titled Terry B, and saved it to the desktop. He then shut down the phone and waited. It did not take long.
John, may I call you John?
The fear of contagion was gone, and this new psychiatrist sat in a comfortable office chair across from his patient.
You lot have been calling me John for over a week now. I'm assuming that hasn't slipped your mind, Doc.
The doctor made a brief note on the page. Argumentative.
Yes, I see your point. Before we start, as you know, the base has a cell relay, and we have been monitoring your messages. We noticed that you sent out a text not long after your daughter left. Would you care to tell me about the message?
John reached over and picked up the phone, twisting it back and forth.
I want a friend of mine to stop by so I can give her this to return to Rachel.
It's Rachel's phone, you know.
Don't you think you will be needing it?
The doctor asked as he made additional notes.
Well, Doc, I'm guessing that where you plan on sending me, I won't be allowed a phone. What makes you think we are sending you somewhere?
He would have to question the nurses to see if one of them had squealed.
I've been committed for a psychiatric evaluation, haven't I? Where did you hear that?
The doctor was looking for answers, a flush of anger in his voice.
Just a guess, Doc. Well, he began, now a bit flustered. Your daughter did sign paperwork to have you looked after for a time, and yes, you will need to be relocated, but I'm thinking someone told you about it, and I would like to know who. You told me just now, Doc, but thanks for being so upfront about it. Getting back to the message, he demanded, feeling like he had just been used. Why didn't you simply give the phone to Sarah? Couldn't she have delivered it?
Both she and Rachel have a lot on their plates, Doc. If you've been paying any attention, you know that Terry is going to visit with Rachel in about a week. She can hand-deliver it.
We could certainly have mailed it to her, the doctor advised, still trying to turn over stones.
No offense, Doc, but I wouldn't entrust anyone here with that piece of Western Way property. I don't know what all is on it, and I sure don't want you knowing either. The doctor was back to writing notes. Trust issues.
All right, Mr. West, perhaps we should visit a different topic. Your dream that got you so worked up. Are you okay talking about it?
Did you want just the dream or the details leading up to the contents of the dream? John asked with indifference.
Please, start wherever you feel comfortable, the doctor said, enfolding his hands over his notebook.
After about an hour, the truth was revealed, and the doctor took off his glasses and pinched the bridge of his nose.
That is quite a story, John, the doctor offered.
Which part?
Well, frankly, all of it, the doctor said, gazing over his notes.
So, let me get this straight, Doc. You don't believe that we have ships out there traveling these vast distances? Or that we encountered another species? Or that we aided the species in retrieving their own? Or is it just the last part that has you flummoxed?
I didn't say I don't believe you. I'm simply saying that it is quite the story, the doctor calmly stated, but appeared a bit miffed.
Then if you believe me, there's no reason to hold me, is there, doctor? The coup de grace delivered. The man chuckled a bit and smiled.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Cadet interrogations. Terry left the facility and sat in her car for a bit before starting the engine and leaving.
Something is way off, she told herself.
After the doctor passed her the phone, John had asked for her to unlock it using the pin he supplied.
I'm having her unlock the thing because I don't trust you to hand her the right phone, Doc, John said accusingly.
The doctor appeared hurt by the comment.
There was a message plainly waiting for her on the display, but she knew better than to ask about it or read it there.
She drove to the nearest convenience store, got a drink, and sat there reading the note. Her eyes widened the more she read, until quite suddenly she blurted out,
"No way!"
She sat there for a moment trying to digest it all, and what it implied. Finally, she picked up her own phone and made a call. On the appointed day that John was scheduled to be moved to the facility where he was to be monitored, the girls came to wish him a farewell and to see him off. A car had been sent from the hospital with two staff members, both of whom were fans, so the meet and greet was cordial, and with a couple of hugs, he was escorted out of the building.
I feel terrible about this, Sarah said, turning to the doctor. What if I'm all wrong?
Look, you two, his moderate tone unchanged.
He is your father, and you can visit any time you want. But remember, the decision to move forward with this is based on some very sound thinking. It has only been a little over 3 weeks since he was revived, and he is still having similar nightmares. Not to say that what he suspects is not true, but the sheer magnitude of what he is proposing is unfathomable. We are not trying to alter his cognitive process. We are trying to establish if it is stable. Who knows? Maybe we will all be satisfied in a month that he is fit and can be released. But for everyone's sake, let's not be too hasty. We take some time. We make sure he is of sound mind. Okay?
The girls looked at each other and seemed satisfied with the argument the doctor had given.
Besides, Sarah pointed out, this will give him a chance to get off cigarettes.
He really needs to quit. The girls said their goodbye to the staff and left. The quarantine base was off a major highway down a 5-mile stretch of road, two of which were off limits without a pass.
A couple of months in the clinic isn't going to get him to stop. You know that.
Rachel had almost choked on her sister's optimistic remark.
He probably had those two nurses stop at the gas station and buy him a pack.
Sarah was not hopeful either. A car was stopped at the intersection and appeared to be broken down. One person stood outside the vehicle beside the open door.
Is that Dad's car?
Rachel asked as they approached. The man standing there was obviously one of the two they had just met, and he flagged them down.
"Your father's been kidnapped," he exclaimed with embarrassment. "They blew out the tires. Then a white van pulled up and took your dad."
"What?" both girls cried out at the same time.
"Jack, the other guy, went to call the cops. I don't know when he's going to get here, but he was taken about 10 minutes ago."
Rachel was already making a call.
"One moment, please," came the reply.
"Rachel, I'm glad to hear from you. How's your..."
Susan's voice was cut off by an angry Rachel.
"Did you do this?" Rachel demanded of her.
"Did I do what?" Susan asked as a knot formed in her stomach.
"My father's just been kidnapped on the way to the mental hospital. Was it you?"
Susan's face went ashen.
"Rachel, I swear, I had nothing to do with any kidnapping. Just slow down. Is Sarah with you?"
"Right here, ma'am," said in a voice that conveyed total disregard.
"Look, I'm getting the director of the FBI on the line with us right now."
After a moment, the voice of Sam Middleton came on the line.
"Yes, Madam President, how can I help?"
As the information was passed along by the nurse who had witnessed the act, a police car pulled up and the second nurse exited the vehicle along with the officer. Back at FBI headquarters, a hasty plan was put into action to locate the white van.
"Director Middleton, I want an update on your status in 1 hour."
"Understood, Madam President." And the line dropped off.
The pain felt from the force of the impact of being thrown into the van, hands cuffed behind his back, was still with him. As he massaged his elbow, he was quick to complain about it.
"You know, that still hurts like hell. I think you did some permanent damage here."
"And what the hell is this?" John demanded of his captors.
"A latte? Since when do I drink lattes?"
The trio had already changed out of their disguises and adopted new ones. The van was sitting under the carport where they had gotten it from, and they were in the process of changing vehicles. Terry looked on with a slight grin on her face.
"We are really sticking our necks out for you. You know that, right?" she finally added.
"Yes, and you're being paid very well for your services, don't you think?" John rebutted.
"Have you got the number?" he asked, taking the pro-offered phone.
"It's the only contact in it," Sean Dancing replied.
Quickly locating the contact, he dialed.
"Casey LeBlanc here."
"Casey, it's West. I need a ride up to the harbor right away."
"Okay.
And I won't be going as myself, nor will my 4 guests.
"Uh-huh. Anything else, John?"
Casey was getting annoyed.
"Nobody can know about this. Nobody. That includes the girls." "Okay, West. What the hell are you getting me into?"
After the half-hour call was complete, the car sped away from the hiding place and headed for the coast. They had a bridge to catch. White House papers. The meeting included the president, her staff, the FBI director, and John's daughters.
"What do we know at this point, Sam?"
The question placed squarely on the FBI director.
"Madam President, the facts are as follows. At approximately 10:20 this morning, the vehicle transporting Mr. West was first made inoperable by use of a nail strip that flattened all 4 tires. A white van then cut off any further possible movement by stopping in its path, at which point 3 persons in masks, all armed with automatic weapons, surrounded the car and forced everyone to exit. The 2 nurses had their phones removed and destroyed. John was handcuffed and physically thrown into the van, at which point it drove off to the east along Highway 1. Both nurses are uninjured, just a bit rattled, but they both seem to have thought that the voices used by the kidnappers were of an Oriental descent. One of the nurses swears it sounded Chinese to him, but there's no evidence to support it. A manhunt is currently underway,
but we suspect that they are holed up, avoiding traffic cams and the roadblocks. A white man was located less than 10 miles from where the abduction occurred. The owner of the vehicle said that the keys were always with him. He indicates that he had driven to a nearby store to get cigarettes and a coffee at about the time of the abduction. We know it was used because the motor was still warm when we found it. The store video shows that he made a purchase during this time in question. His story seems to check out.
Sam, do you feel that this is a kidnapping for monetary gain?
The president asked.
At this time, we simply don't have enough information. Sarah and Rachel have given us permission to tap their phones and the roadblocks are still in effect. But we simply do not have any hard answers yet. I'm sorry, Madam President.
Thanks, Sam. Please keep me informed of any developments.
Rachel transcripts. Sarah and Rachel were both down in the dumps as a nagging thought kept resurfacing in their minds and in their conversations.
What if they are after the drive technology and that's all? Dad will simply disappear and the only clue of his demise will be when a foreign power suddenly has a drive of their own.
It had been several days since John was taken, and few clues had been discovered. The guns were found in a dumpster several hundred miles away, covered in oil and identified as modified squirt guns.
Squirt guns?
Sarah spoke into her phone.
He was abducted at the point of a squirt gun?
She suddenly found that she had an itch she could not scratch.
Thanks for the update.
I'll let Rachel know, and she hung up, a puzzled look on her face. Rachel was also just finishing up, so Sarah broke the news to her.
Nothing,
Rachel said, obviously upset.
Well, it's something, just not much, she said,
then continued with,
I feel sick about all this. It's my fault he was taken. Sarah, he probably would have been taken anyway. That was the day he was scheduled to be released, you know. The FBI still haven't figured out who blabbed, or if the information was sold by one of the staff. There just isn't a smoking gun.
No pun intended, she said with a quirky smile.
Who was that?
James. They are finishing up the internal disconnects, and once the new hall is ready, the entire guts of the Calico will be moved over to the new Persian hall. Sarah knew how the ship had been built and why, but it still seemed impossible that the Persian would be operational in just a few hours.
What then?
Sarah asked, trying not to think of her father.
I'm dropping the Calico hall on the moon, and they will recycle what they can and discard what's left.
What about the rest of the refit? Did you tell the president to take a hike or what?
Dad says he wants to keep them in the loop, so I'll let the DOD assholes put their gear back on, but there's going to be stipulations. No more of this trying to kill everyone horse crap. They can have the reins in the solar system, but once outside, the ship has complete control. I think they're all on board with the plan.
You sent everything back, though, didn't you? I mean, everything but the reactor?
Yep. With a big old kiss my ass sign attached. All that refit can be done later. There is a lot the Persian can be doing right now. If Shannon gets her Step 6 finalized, we should just forget about arming the Persian and do it upright with the next hull.
Rachel's phone alerted her to an update. She looked it over and with more than a little annoyance, she selected the number and connected.
I see you guys are changing up the work order again.
Jack Reynolds looked at the camera and smiled.
Hey, Rachel. Sorry about that, but it sounds like they need the additional help with the hull alignment prior to moving the guts out of the Calico into the Persian.
And the refuel? She asked.
I think Jim is worried about running low. He is a bit paranoid about things like that, so I just okayed it. Hope you don't mind. I can change back if you want.
No, that's fine. He's doing some surprising good work. And if he thinks he needs more gas, I don't have a problem with it.
I just wish he'd clear it with me first before making changes to the schedule. He doesn't realize sometimes that there's other things going on. Anyway, do not interrupt. Let him finish it up, and we will have a little chat next time I see him.
Okay, sounds good. And they hung up.
James? Sarah asked, remembering her own need to put him in his place only a few weeks ago.
It's not a big deal. Just changes up some of the arrival and departures from the hub.
With the transfer of the Calico's interior in progress, James was glad to see the additional help. He knew the process was simple enough, but if something went wrong, the extras were in place and ready to assist. The display indicated an incoming message, and his eyes read the words that appeared on the visor.
Seems a bit premature. I thought we were going to wait for a crew.
But whatever. Fuel, he thought to himself, as he pressed a button on his wrist to acknowledge receipt of the message. The two halves of the new shell had been placed, and the internal clamps released, allowing for the outer fuel shell to be ejected, and the new halves to be aligned and draped over the frame. The compression coils, superstructure, and ring combo were already off, floating in the distance, and the new set were standing by for placement. That job was even simpler than removing the guts. Once the transfer was complete and the frame clamps reasserted, there was nothing left to do but hook up the plumbing to the fuel shell and make the electrical connections. Then the new compression frame would be fitted and locked in place. The pressurization of the hull would take the longest, as there were a series of tests that needed to take place, and each were time-sensitive.
Well, it's missing a few of the good bits, like cannons and missiles and scopes, but that will get done in a timely manner, James mused.
For now, it was time to move the ship over to the water storage tank in orbit around the moon and fuel up. James looked back at the significant amount of hardware that was about to be dismantled and destroyed on the off chance that someone had done to them what he had done to someone else. This brought a smile to his face as he remembered how well it had worked out.
They got it done, Rachel announced. The Persian is moving over to take on some fuel, and then we will start transferring personnel back to Earth.
Still no word on your father's whereabouts? Trent Bishop asked in a low tone.
No. He's just gone.
Rachel let her emotions take over, and Trent could hear her voice choke up.
They'll find him, Rachel. I have a good feeling about it, he tried to persuade himself.
The movement of personnel from the Persian to the hub station was happening while the ship was being fueled. The orders were getting updated regularly, and as the names were selected, the individual displays would give instructions for each person to queue up. The skiff would need to make 3 runs to get everyone to their assigned locations. It was not until James had finished up on the tanker and came back aboard the Persian that he realized the ship appeared devoid of people.
Okay, that's odd, he thought. Hey, Bridge, where is everyone?
Most of the help got sent back to the transfer hub. Something about a scheduling conflict that was out of their hands?
Scheduling conflict? James pursed his lips. Rachel must be letting her father's disappearance affect her work. She needs some time off, he concluded.
James, when you get a chance, would you come to the bridge?
Anberg asked pleasantly. Arriving, he was met by 4 of the cadets that Rachel had let go, along with John West.
Hey, James, John said. Want to make some money?